You are Locked On Mets, your daily New York Mets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello to all you amazing Mets fans. You're listening to Locked On Mets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Thank you for making Locked On Mets your first listen every day. Locked On Mets is free and available on all platforms, including YouTube. On today's show, for a Friday Farm Report, we're going to talk about Francisco Alvarez and if he could make an impact on the New York Mets right now. I'm joined by our guy, Jordan Grossman, who does these Friday Farm Reports with me as well. In the first segment, we just talk about the hypothetical. In the second segment, we talk a little bit more about the reality of Alvarez being potentially the top prospect in baseball soon, and do you really want to rush that along? And then we will close the show today talking about the upcoming series between the Mets and the Miami Marlins this weekend. Before we get to any of that, though, I'm your host, Ryan Finkelstein. If you want to find any of my work, follow me on Twitter, at FinkelsteinRyan. You can also find some of my writing at justbaseball.com, where I work as the managing editor. Today, I'm once again joined by Jordan Grossman, our guy for social media. You can find him on Twitter at MetsFanSince02. And I'm just going to lay it out for you. We're going to take a trip down the hypothetical highway, and I'm going to present my case right now. And this is just on how Francisco Alvarez can get to the big leagues. So here's the narrative, Jordan. We've seen James McCann hanging out in Double A for a little bit. We've seen, Tyler McGill make a trip through. We've seen Max Scherzer in particular there right now. And I think Alvarez hit a home run in the game that Scherzer started. So suddenly Buck Showalter starts to get some conversations with some of his players, particularly a guy that he holds, you know, his opinion in great regard in a Max Scherzer. And he says, you know, this kid Alvarez, man, he can really, really, really hit. And suddenly, as the conversation starts going and they see William Contreras down in Atlanta hitting home runs every seven at-bats, the Mets might think, should we just call up the kid and have him be our DH? Jordan, what do you think about the idea of Francisco Alvarez being the answer that the Mets have been searching for all year to finally be that last bat in this lineup?
You know what's funny is if you told me this 3 months ago, I would have said, you're absolutely insane. I would have told you to get a grip. But now it's a real serious thought that goes through my head probably every single day, especially when I see the Mets. You know, they have a great offense, but they're really lacking a second power bat behind Pete Alonso. It's just the bat is ready. The bat is absolutely ready for the major leagues. It's the only question now is, is it just going to be strictly as a DH, or can he catch 2 to 3 times a week behind a James McCann or with a Tomas Nito, whoever it is? Just look at the numbers he's putting up over the last 6 weeks in Double A. He's making a mockery of the pitching down there. Yeah. It's embarrassing. People forget he's a 20-year-old. This could be a generational hitting talent.
And you were just out of town for a couple of weeks, and I know you were overseas, so maybe not as much cell phone service. What was just your reaction when you come home and your eyes just start melting at the stats that Alvarez has put up over the last couple of weeks here?
I thought my baseball reference page was glitching and that maybe I was in the wrong place. Like, I just remember, you know, I was in Europe. Occasionally I would go to baseball reference just to check his numbers and just be blown away at the things he was doing. I mean, I can pull up the numbers right here. Over his last 23 games, he has an 851 slugging percentage, which just, you know, that's good for an OPS as a Double A catcher, but that's it. That's just his slugging percentage. 494 ISO, which just, you know, ISO calculates purely base hits. That's insane. A 1.286 OPS, 12 home runs, 19 extra base hits. It's just, it's road to the show numbers. You know, it's if you go on rookie mode and you just start blasting home runs every single game, that's what he's doing in Double A as a 20-year-old.
Not only is it Road to the Show numbers, I don't know if you've ever played where they have the dynamic hit tool. And so it's like, as you continue to progress, it gets harder and harder. That's like the beginning of Road to the Show. Or if you just turn that off and hit on Rookie, where you're just getting pitches in the zone that you can mash all the time. It's incredible what he's doing. And again, it's double A pitching. And I think at times we talk, sometimes the pitching in double A can be better than the pitching in triple A because some of the better prospects are down there. And he has a reputation in this league. I think that was why there was a little bit of a learning curve because, you know, he was starting to get scouted pretty heavily. And I think he was starting to get pitched to against his weaknesses for a little bit there. But he's made those adjustments. He's red hot. And I think that the catching discussion is something that we can have in the next segment because there's a little more that goes into that as far as what it takes to be a big league catcher. And I think that's a lot to put on a 20-year-old. But if you kind of redshirt him, which is what I would kind of describe it as, where you carry three catchers, because if Alvarez is going to be DHing most days, why would you need a JD Davis type? I'm not saying you do that right away, but eventually when you get to that point, if you have three catchers, you can, you know, pinch hit Alvarez when he's not catching. You can do a lot of things. And I think that he has two really good mentors that could teach him a lot this year. Just get him in the room with them, learn how to prepare at the major league level. But you don't necessarily have to handle a Chris Bassett per se, because I don't think Chris Bassett, as much as he wants Alvarez's bat in the lineup, I don't think he wants to pitch to him.
Yeah, I don't think Alvarez is ready to handle a pitching staff like this, especially, you know, when they're going to gear up for a pennant race, you know, sometime in the next 6 to 8 weeks. It's not ideal. You don't want him. But like you said, having him work with the major league coaching staff, having him work with the pitchers, maybe during their off time, you know, before games, just working on some stuff in the bullpen, that could be really beneficial towards his development in the long term. Because I don't think double A is a challenge for him anymore. I really just, like you said, he had that little slump where he was having trouble with handling breaking balls. You know, they were pitching away to him and he was chasing. But now he's just, you know, he's waiting for his pitch. He knows teams are going to try to get him to chase a little bit. And he sits on the one he's looking for and he just crushes it. You know, when you see those home runs, the outfielders don't move. They're absolute lasers and they go out of the stadium in 2 seconds. So he's just ridiculous with the bat. And like I said, I don't think double A is a challenge for him anymore. I could see why maybe they want to promote him to triple A first, just to get him to handle maybe some more veteran pitchers over there, you know, guys who are in their late 20s, early 30s, and who have been in the majors before, as opposed to double A where it's mostly just prospects. So, yeah, I mean, it makes sense.
Yeah, I want to get into that a little bit here, and I also want to kind of go back to the Wilson Contreras thing, but first, a quick word from our sponsors. All right, so I want to talk about William Contreras as a comp here. Not necessarily that their swings are identical or anything. I haven't looked that deep into it, but more just by impact. You know, Contreras has gotten a lot of time at DH. Right now, he's actually the second leading vote getter in the NL behind Bryce Harper. He's done a good job catching every once in a while. He's obviously farther along. He's 24 compared to Alvarez. But when you just talk about the offensive role, in 118 plate appearances, he's hitting .286, .364 on base, .619 slugging, a .167 WRC plus. Again, that is weighted runs created plus, measuring hitters based on a league average of 100. His WOBA, which we can talk about with Alvarez in a second, is .417. So you're seeing him, do what I think a lot of this young talent in baseball can nowadays, where they're great at launching baseballs. And if they're a power hitter, even if they're like Contreras striking out at a 28% clip at the big league level, he's getting his home runs. And it's one of the big reasons why the Braves have kind of taken off. It's Contreras and it's Michael Harris, along with some of the, you know, incumbent veterans that they had.
Oh, yeah. And you need a big bopper in that lineup. Like I mentioned before, they have Alonso, who's obviously, we know how ridiculous he is with the bat. You just launch home runs almost every single day. But they need that second guy, you don't know whether it's going to come through a trade or whether it's going to come through the farm system. You know, you have a Mark Vientos also doing pretty well in Syracuse. he seems like he's ready for the major leagues. I don't know what's going on with Eduardo Escobar. He was signed as kind of a power bat, but he's really struggled during these first 2 months of the season. So having Alvarez come up as a DH, I think, would be a really great benefit to the team. I think there's a good chance he would struggle in the first few weeks, similar to like how Julio Rodriguez and Bobby Witt, you know, those were young 20, 21 year olds who came up and they had a little bit, you know, issue handling some of the breaking stuff, getting, you know, the umpires weren't really being fair to, especially Rodriguez, you know, on some maybe borderline strikes. So it's probably going to be a struggle for him early on if they do decide to call up at some point this season. But I think the bat is absolutely ready for the major leagues.
Yeah, and then I think, obviously, his bat, I believe, is ready. I think Mark Vientos' bat is ready. I guess the question is which option do you go to? And I'm sure if Alvarez got promoted before Vientos, he would feel some type of way about it, and rightfully so. He is really kind of the next in line. But I also think that we know that Alvarez is the player with a higher ceiling that it's just going to entice fans a little bit more, but also I think could maybe, I don't know if handling the jump sounds right, but something just tells me that this could happen this year and it could make a lot of sense, but only the DH side of it. I can't see a scenario where Francisco Alvarez is catching game one of the NLDS. I just don't see that. But that's okay. I think that's fine with what this team is looking at. Why don't you, I know you had a couple of the advanced stats. I want to talk about that, and then we can kind of close up the Alvarez conversation as far as the defense is concerned. But what did you find as far as what he's doing to baseballs based on what the metrics are telling us?
So going off the Eastern League, which is where Binghamton is in AA, he's got a 404 weighted on base average, which is fourth best in the league for all guys with a minimum of 200 plate appearances, and then a 154 WRC plus. Which is just, you know, that's really, really good. That if he hits his ceiling, that's the kind of bat he can be in the major leagues, like a 145, 150 WRC guy over, let's say, 400 or 500 plate appearances. That's the kind of guy you expect to see. Maybe not right away, but in 2-3 years or even next season, that's the kind of bat he can be for you in the middle of this lineup with Pete Alonso, with Francisco Lindor.
Well, the thing, too, is like I just mentioned with Contreras, I don't know if he's going to hit it a 167 WRC plus the whole year, but there's guys that do it. That's the thing, is we see hitters thriving at a younger age. So I think that the case for it is that I don't think that Alvarez is the type of prospect where his confidence can really be shaken, especially if you don't throw him out into the fire as a defensive catcher. That's the thing to me where I think the confidence could get shaken. But I think if you basically tell him, look, you're going to hit, and maybe there's a random week where the Mets win the first two games and they have a day game after a night game in a series against the Marlins and David Peterson is pitching, and you say, all right, well, let's just throw him out there and see what happens. I think he would still get some run, but I think that is the route. The other side of the coin is you're talking about a prospect that – considering the graduations, I know for Just Baseball, he's probably going to be our top prospect in the game by the midseason update, if not top two. So, you know, and I think the person he'd be behind is Grayson Rodriguez of the Orioles, so that would be a pitcher anyway. I think the case to keep him in the minors is obviously this is the most valuable prospect your organization has had probably since David Wright. I don't really think there's a conversation there. I think that is the case. So do you want to treat him with kid's gloves, bring him along slowly, and make sure you do it right? I think there's still an argument to be made. I think that's where you and me leaned all off season and pretty much until this day, where we would always say, yeah, but they should probably still play this slow. You still think that might be the case?
So if you put a gun to my head and ask me when he's coming up, I'd still say it's 2023, just because he is a 20-year-old catcher in AA. You know, he's ripping through the minor leagues right now, but there's a chance that if they could call him up too soon and he could really struggle, and maybe it does shake his confidence just a little bit in the short term. But I mean, it's so tantalizing just to think about the idea of having him in this lineup. I mean, like you said, he's probably going to be the number one prospect for a lot of sites by the All-Star break, by whenever, you know, you decide to do your midseason update. You see Riley Green has made it up to the major leagues. Adley Rutschman's already up there. CJ Abrams. So, and then Grayson Rodriguez has a lat injury. I think the only guy that really has a case to be number one ahead of Alvarez at this point is Corbin Carroll with the Diamondbacks. He's one of those guys. But yeah, he's the best Mets prospect, like you said, since David Wright. This can be a franchise changing bat for them if he hits his ceiling.
I think the bottom line for me is, and actually Alvarez isn't on the 40 yet, is he? I don't think he is.
They would have to make a 40 man move if they decide to bring him up.
Which obviously isn't a big deal. But because you know he's gonna be on the 40, you know, maybe this offseason anyway. I think if you just talk about not even, I guess, expanding beyond the 40, I was going to say the 40, but even just there, when it comes to everyone who's a Met right now in the organization, I don't think it's crazy to say it's Pete Alonso and then Francisco Alvarez is the second best bat. Now, he's not quite there yet, but that's the type of potential we're talking about here, where you're looking at the next 5 years. And it's hard to think that it's not going to be a large portion of it where this guy's going to be right in the middle of the lineup. And the protection that he can provide Pete Alonso when he gets here, that's going to be big. Because as much as I like Jeff McNeil in the five hole, and I think that still works right now, it's not having a guy that, you know, another team has to think, well, if we put Pete on, the guy right behind him could just take this 2-run homer and turn it into a 3-run homer or a grand slam.
And, you know, I think with the Mets, if they decide not to go after a big bat at the trade deadline and they just focus on pitching, people are soon going to get tired of watching JD Davis try to swing through 95 mile per hour fastballs in the zone. It's just, it's getting tough with him. And like I mentioned before, Escobar too, just really struggling through his first couple of months here. Hopefully he can bounce back. But I still think Mark Vientos would be the guy they call ahead of him, just because Vientos, like you said, is on the 40 man already, so they don't have to make a roster move there. They can just call him up. And Alvarez is 20 years old, so but it's so tantalizing, just the idea of him in this lineup that could really use another power bat.
It's fun to talk about, and I think that they're definitely searching for something, because I don't know if you saw this, but Daniel Polka was close to making it up. My guy was almost there. He was red hot. He had a 2-week span where he hit 5 home runs, and they're about to call him up, and I guess there was some injury that we haven't even – at least I haven't heard what the injury was that prevented him, and that's when Dom ended up kind of getting the call in his place, and now you're back to where you started a month ago when you demoted him anyway. And so I think that that's been a problem all year. I will say I'm about to jump out ahead of a take that I don't have a ton of confidence in, but I want to believe in. And I think Eduardo Escobar is going to have a monster July. But even with that said, I still think that they have to find an answer. And the more that I think about what's out there at the deadline, I still am of the belief that the best answer is, let's not see the Mets trade a Mark Vientos. Let's see the Mets give Mark Vientos the opportunity. Let's see them try out an Alvarez. Let's see what Paul – I don't want to necessarily see the Mets trade for some fill-in DH bat and maybe lose one of their top prospects.
Yeah, I think – it's a possibility. I mean, when you have someone like Steve Cohen, who's just willing to blow right through that $300 million number that people keep talking about, I think the odds of them trading for a big bat are pretty high. You know, whether it's a, I don't know, depending how the Red Sox do, you could see a JD Martinez, so someone like that. If they could add him to the lineup, that'd be a big plus, obviously. But I think the lineup is already good enough, you know, run production-wise, that they don't really need to worry too much about that. They just need to focus on the pitching side. You know, we saw how they got kind of beaten up in that Houston series this past couple of days. So, yeah, I agree with you. I think giving Vientos a shot, maybe if they decide, you know, to listen to us and all the fans and give Alvarez a chance for a few weeks, you know, let him come up here and work with the staff on off days, stuff like that, and just be that William Contreras in the lineup. That would just be so much fun.
And also, someone else would be going through AA to add to my theory here of Mets being so wowed by Alvarez's talent that it gets up to the big bosses. Jacob DeGrom at some point in the next couple of weeks will probably be pitching potentially to Francisco Alvarez. So that's going to be a thrilling game if you're a minor league baseball fan, but also another little chance that Alvarez has to sort of show off. And I will say, too, he's put up big numbers and he's had big games in front of these guys, and I don't think that's a coincidence either. I think he's the type that probably has a major leaguer in his clubhouse and takes that as a challenge to do a lot of damage. But we got to focus a little bit on the weekend series, so we're going to talk about that in just a minute here. All right, so Mets Marlins part two. Gonna have a third part a couple weeks here. A ton of baseball against the fish. First of all, what is your reaction on the show today, on Thursday's show? I basically spent a lot of time just complaining that Mets fans are a little bit too upset and overreactionary over a couple of games against the Astros. What's your take on that? Should we be concerned that the Mets lost a couple of games to a 45-win team that has been in the World Series how many times in the past 5 years?
I love when the doomer take comes out, like, from all of Mets Twitter. It's so funny to see for a team that has the best record in the National League. This team sucks. They don't have the guts. They can't beat the elite, true elite teams across the league. It happens. What is this, the 30th time this year that the season's over? First it was DeGrom. Then it was Scherzer going down. Oh, can't do this, can't do that.
The season ended when James McCann went down too. Let's not forget, which is ridiculous.
And then, you know, the season's back on when Escobar hits for the cycle, this and that. You know, yeah. Mets fans are a very unique bunch, and it's part of the reason why I love this fan base, is that they're so, you know, ride and die with this team and just so emotional with it. But yeah, it's just funny to see people freaking out after a couple of games, especially when you have Trevor Williams, who's not really expected to be in the rotation. He's more of a long man. And then you have Carlos Carrasco, who clearly wasn't healthy, at least maybe not going into the start, but pretty early in the start, he probably started feeling some back tightness, and that affected how he was throwing his stuff. I don't really think too much of this. It's not really a big deal. They're going to play the Marlins. I think they can easily take 2 out of 3, if not sweep that series from them. And they're still, like I said, they're still the best team in the National League. They still have a 4.5-5 game lead over the Braves. Scherzer's going to be back on Sunday. DeGrom's, you know, starting to throw some sim games down in Port St. Lucie, so he should be back probably by the All-Star break. McCann's on his way back, I think, Friday, so I'm not worried at all, really. There's no reason to hit the panic button here.
That's where I'm at, too. It's one of those things where I like going back at the pessimistic Mets fans, and it's all out of good fun. So if anyone is upset by the way I maybe yelled at you on Thursday's show, look, it's just I get frustrated because I'm watching the best Mets baseball that I've seen in years, and I'm at the point right now where I'll be critical of individual players, but I'm still of the belief that until this team goes on some extended string of losing, I'm not going to criticize them because they're going to lose some baseball games along the way. As much as we all want to panic here, you look at the last 10 games. Yeah, the Braves have been playing great. They're 7-3 in their last 10. The Mets are 6-4 in their last 10. They're not really slipping too much. Obviously, the Braves got right back in the mix with that winning streak, but to me, that just erased a slow start from the Braves. That's the way I look at it. I think that if you're talking about where these two teams are through 70 games, it's about where we would have expected, and the Mets still have, as you said, a 4.5-game lead in the division. The one thing that's holding them back, and this is where a Mets fan will continue this spiral off of a cliff, is that they had to once again go against the Sandy Alcantara buzzsaw in game one on Friday, and that is going to be a tough challenge. Taijuan Walker has been great this year. I don't have any doubts that he can limit a Marlins lineup, especially in that massive ballpark. It's kind of a great ballpark for someone like Taijuan Walker, but Alcantara is impossible.
I'll just say my preseason NL Cy Young pick is looking pretty good right now.
I
put Sandy Alcantara down there. I wish I put a little money down on him because it looks like he has a really good chance to win it so far.
Now I'd imagine he's probably like a favorite. I know he is the favorite, but I'm saying it might even be in the negative. He's been so good as far as your odds.
Probably him and Wheeler are like right at the top.
Yeah.
it's amazing what he can do. And he's not even a big strikeout guy. It's just, you know, he's so good at limiting hard contact, just getting a ton of ground balls. He's pretty incredible. But I still think they could take 2 out of 3. They could surprise and win a game against Alcantara. Who knows? They've beaten some good pitchers in the past this season. I think as Mets fans, we've just gotten so spoiled with winning every series, you know, taking 2 out of 3, taking 3 out of 4, that when they lose 2 in a row, people are just like, just have feel this need to hit the panic button. And like, we've just gotten very spoiled by the team this year.
Yeah, 100%. And I think with Alcantara, you know, you talk about the strikeouts, and he's very much looking like DeGrom at his peak powers, where he's got 101 whenever he wants it. He's going to try to pound there. He doesn't try. He does pound the zone, knowing that it's pretty damn hard to square up, you know, his 101 mile per hour sinker. And, you know, when he needs the strikeouts, he'll get them. When he has a couple guys in scoring position and he needs to get that out and keep the ball from getting in play, he can do that. But he also is pitching deep in the games because he knows his bullpen's terrible. So he knows if he wants to get a win, and he's 7-2 this year, on a team that is not great. Now, you're 7-2 on a team that's 31-36. And I'm sure their record when he pitches is even better than that, because I know he's gotten the DeGrom tough luck, no decisions. So yeah, he's amazing. He's averaging 8 innings per start for about 6 weeks now, I think. It's insane. So that's the one game to be concerned about. Game two, you got Chris Bassitt versus Trevor Rogers. The Mets have fared a lot better against lefties over the last couple of weeks here. Rogers, the head on the ropes last time, were unable to really put up a big number in that first inning. They still won that start, if I'm not mistaken. But they did, right? So, you know, I think they can still get to him, no problem. He's walking a ton of batters this year, and that's the type where you can see guys like Mark Canha, Luis Guillorme, Brandon Nimmo just grind out of bats, put this young pitcher in a hole early. And I think that he was fortunate to get through it and to be able to get some confidence. I think that the Mets can really make him pay early and knock him out of the game.
I'll just say, you know, maybe not Friday night against the Marlins, but Mark Vientos is from Miami. It's, you know, facing a lefty on Saturday. Might not be a bad time for his major league debut. You know, that's Escobar's struggling a little bit, give him a little time at third base. I'm not saying it's going to happen. It's probably more likely that it won't happen, but not a bad time for a debut. I think it would be pretty cool to see him debut down there.
And one of the few hitters the Mets have on their 40 that would have absolutely no problem hitting balls out of that cavernous ballpark. So interesting. You're right. My theory on Vientos has been that he's one of their two key trade assets at the deadline. Look at him and Mauricio. So I think that they're going to sit on that and wait till the deadline so he can continue to kind of pile stats and you don't put any bad tape out there potentially to ruin his value. But if you think that he's the guy and you think that he could potentially replace JD Davis and be the primary DH, you might as well do it and see what you got. And you know what? If you have to, if it does ruin his trade value, you deal with the consequences of that because it could be the answer. The final game of the series, we don't necessarily know who's pitching yet. We know Max Scherzer is pushing to start. We don't know who's starting for the Marlins. Here's my one question to you that we'll close with: would you rather see Scherzer pitch on Sunday to close out a series against the Marlins, or you wait a day, you have him have the off day? Well, he technically have 2 extra days of rest, Sunday and Monday. And then you have him make his return at Citi Field on Tuesday night against the Houston Astros.
That's a tough question. But knowing Max Scherzer and how competitive he is and listening to his post-game comments after that rehab start in Binghamton, I think he's going to be on the mound Sunday. He is itching to get back out there as soon as possible. I don't think he really cares whether it's the Marlins or the Astros. But if his scheduled start is Sunday, he's going to start on Sunday. That's just who he is. It's why he's as good as he's been for his entire career. He's just the ultimate competitor. I remember I saw, you know, you mentioned earlier, Alvarez hit that home run during the Scherzer start. Scherzer didn't high five him or anything. Scherzer just hat off, pacing back and forth in the dugout, just like eyes wide open, just looking around. It's the funniest thing. He's, He's so competitive. So I think he's going to be out there Sunday. I'd like to see him against the Astros, obviously. I think every Mets fan would, especially at home. But it's probably going to be Sunday.
Yeah, and, you know, it would basically set him up. If he were to start on Tuesday, that would set him up to start the following Sunday. If you start him Sunday, he could probably go, you know, I would think Friday. He would obviously miss that Astros series, and then you can have him pitch again. So you would be able to then have him start, you know, two games in a four-game span, which is pretty nice as well due to the two off days. So maybe that is the answer. That is why on the show today I was talking about how I'm not concerned about Carrasco because all these days off kind of allow the Mets to set up their rotation however they'd like. If they go Scherzer, then I think you're looking at Peterson, Taijuan Walker against the Astros, which I think they can still find a way to win those games even with those guys. So that could be the answer. But that will be all for the show today for Locked On Mets this week. You can find me on Twitter at Finkelstein Ryan. You can find the show at Locked On Mets, and Jordan Grossman is behind a lot of what you see on that account. You can find him on Twitter at MetsFanSenso2. Find his Facebook page, We Are Mets Believers. Thank you for making this your first listen today. Now for your second listen, check out Locked On MLB, hosted by Paul Francis Sullivan. Locked On MLB is where you want to go to stay up to date with everything going on in Major League Baseball. You can follow Locked On MLB wherever you get podcasts.